Hi, Ann.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good?
We're having a big snowstorm here in Madison, so I'm sort of snowed in and
so you got to go. You got to go home early?
No, I'm still in my office. I just
don't
want to leave. I'm snowed in the office.
Oh. Sorry to hear that.
I'll be okay.
So, well, I just
came back from Austin, Texas, and I drove the whole way from Austin to Madison in one day. I drove 1,235 miles in one day. So
whoa.
I think I can get home from my office if I did that.
That's almost dangerous.
It actually is, but, you know, once you get to Des Moines, you pretty much have to keep going. There's just nothing. It's just wilderness out there. And it looks crazy at night. It just seems like you're driving in the middle of nowhere.
But isn't that like driving, like, what, 15, 18 hours straight?
Yep. Yeah, and I didn't even rely on any astronaut tricks to avoid stops or anything like that. I just used my physical powers.
No drugs?
No, the astronaut trick is, don't you know what the astronaut did? You don't know what I'm talking about?
No.
The woman that went to attack somebody or something like that, and she wore adult diapers so she wouldn't have to stop and use the bathroom.
Oh, that, yeah, the Depends strategy,
yeah.
Which is something you use in conjunction with drugs like coffee, I guess.
Yeah, I could have used some drugs, but I used only lots of little bottles of those Starbucks things that you can buy in the gas station, you know?
Yeah.
Bottled ones.
Oh, I see.
I lived on that.
Yeah.
I drove on that.
Well, you live on the edge.
Yeah, that was pretty edgy.
You know, speaking of you living on the edge, Ann.
Good segue.
To many of our viewers, you're familiar as the person who
melted down and freaked out and lost my mind.
Well, I'm glad that you took care of the phraseology. I was wondering how to handle it myself.
I'm very interested in how alarmed people are by, you know, a show of emotion, a show of passion, a show of heat. You know, even for 1 minute, it becomes like the talk of blogging heads. It takes up the first 10 minutes of like, what, five blogging heads is in a row?
A lot
used to be the Iraq War was the
it's
first
thing. It's true.
Segment.
And, I mean, this is, of course, the thing involving Garance, Frank Arruda.
Who's fine? I'm not mad at Garance in any way.
I think she felt that she was an innocent bystander.
She used a phrase that pushed a button, and I wasn't going to let it pass. She referred to an old controversy that took place last September, where I had written a couple of pretty casual blog posts making fun of a photograph of a bunch of bloggers who had lunch with President Clinton.
Right.
And this was an important issue to me, which I wrote about in a style that I write about on my blog, which is not the same kind of style that, you know, journalists who work for, you know, commercial magazines write for. I write in an eccentric personal style that involves a lot of, you know, art and humor and eccentric viewpoints about politics and about, aesthetics and things like that. So I write about that. And, you know, but this post got some people mad because I made fun of a particular person who I didn't even name in the blog post, actually, but people who I think already didn't like me decided to just use that to try to really get at me. And in doing that and writing about it, they ended up sort of encapsulating it. The meme that they came up with was that I was opposed to women having breasts. Or
which
that
you
I
would
had
surely,
attacked a woman
would
for simply having breasts. What?
Which you would surely consider an oversimplification of your position.
Not just an oversimplification, but just completely distorted, wrong-headed,
okay.
And intended to attack me so that when Garance made a reference to it by saying and I'll name the woman because Garance did, the Jessica Valenti breast controversy, and then started to move on, I was like, you know, I'm not going to let you do that. That is framing it with your term. And the term of, you know, lots of people that she knows and works with, a lot of people like Ezra Klein and this Lawyers, Guns, and Money character who's always attacking me. And I felt like this was linked to just a whole bunch of people who got this meme going, who had been attacking me since last September about it. And I wasn't going to allow her to frame the controversy in those terms.
Okay.
And so when, you know, I got very passionate about it. Although my passion lasts 1 minute. You know, the passion of the alt-house, it's 1 minute long.
Yeah, but there's a quantitative dimension and a qualitative dimension to these things. And on the qualitative dimension, I really thought you packed a lot in there. The let me just interrupt you and say, you know, when that happened, a lot of our commenters, first of all, some of them didn't want to see you on the site ever again. Well, you're on the site. Also, a lot of them are sick of the talk about it. For example, in the previous...
Exactly. I'm sick of it. I can't believe people keep talking about it. Trent Dresner talks about it. I was on my spring break in Austin, Texas, taking a bath, and I put blogging heads on so I'd have something to listen to. And it was you and Michael Kinsley, and it's like, oh, great, Michael Kinsley's on the show. What will he talk about? Well, me, apparently.
Yeah,
I just like, it's like the toilet.
You were the topic du jour. It wasn't just us. You were all of the blogs here. But let me say something to our viewers and potential commenters. We are going to get into this whole thing in a little bit, including, you know, what you think it says about various issues, the blog-related issues, you know, its kind of roots, the whole issue of whether and if so why left-wing bloggers hate you and blah, blah, blah. But let me say, I mean, as for viewers who hate it, two things. We're going to talk about some other things, and one virtue of the topic structure here is that they can just click on other topics.
Yeah,
the other thing is they don't have to watch any of it, and if that leaves them one day without content they want to watch, I apologize. Actually, there was one that kind of fell through for today. We were going to have two for today, but we will work to get something up as soon as possible, and this will probably be the last time I get into this whole thing. But I have not expressed myself on it, and so I kind of... and in fact, some things I said when I talked to Mike were kind of misinterpreted by some people. So we're going to get into it, for better or worse. It's optional viewing.
Yeah, I think
and then we're going to get into other things. Okay,
yes.
Sorry I interrupted. Go ahead.
No. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Well,
after you.
Well, I mean, if you want to start at... we might as well start at the beginning and go ahead and get my clarification of what I said to Mike out of the way. I mean... You're right. The whole thing does begin. Well, you would contest that. Okay, maybe the whole thing doesn't begin. But one underlying thing here, this is the thing that Garance brought up that set you off, was this photograph that you blogged on. About a dozen liberal bloggers had lunch or something with President Clinton. There was the photo op afterwards, of course, as there always is. You thought that... well, maybe you should convey what you thought
before I say what I thought
about your interpretation.
I actually have a problem with the way you talked about it, too, because you also portrayed it as me writing about some woman's breasts.
Well,
you know,
it did reach that point, Ann. I think it's safe to say, right?
I think, what?
It did reach the point of you writing about a woman's breasts.
No. Here's what, when I wrote about breasts, when I wrote the post that was called, Let's Take a Closer Look at Those Breasts, I was not talking about the actual woman's breasts. I was talking about the breasts that she shows on her blog. And I'm holding up a paper copy of the image that's on her blog, at the top of her blog, two images on the top of a silhouette of a woman with large breasts, and it's designed to basically spice up the graphic. I went to art school. You know, I talk about graphic images a lot. I'm interested in analyzing photographs, like the photograph of Clinton with the bloggers. I'm also interested in how people present themselves on their blog.
Okay, hold on.
Let me just get the whole thought out. That when I went over when I wanted to write about the second post, which is the one that got people so upset, and that I inflammatorily called, Let's Take a Closer Look at These Breasts, the breasts that I'm talking about in that writing are not the woman's breasts, the person. They are the ones that she chooses to put on her blog to represent her. And here's a post from back in September also that shows at the top post is a photograph of just a woman's chest in a tight T-shirt. That also shows her breasts. Over here you can see the bag that she tries to sell to, I guess, make some money off the blog, which is fine. But her bag is an image of that silhouette of that big, busty woman. And, you know, she has a book coming out called Full Frontal Feminism. It has a picture of a naked woman. Oh, you see just her waist area. But basically, full frontal and the picture itself creates the idea of a woman's body. So this is a person who is using images of women's bodies, sexy, breasty women's bodies, to spice up her blog for whatever reason. Now, I wasn't a reader of her blog. I didn't know. But I was just trying to figure out, well, who is this person? I didn't know who she was when I looked at the original picture, which I thought was a funny picture and I wanted to mock. And then in starting to write about it, once I saw what her name was and what her blog was, I went over to her blog and I saw all these images of breasts. Now, to me, that stuff fits together in a humorous way that I wanted to make fun of. But if you go back to the original post, which was Clinton and the bloggers, or something like that. It was about the entire post, and it was my motivation for writing that. It didn't have anything to do with the way that one woman looked. It had to do with a larger problem that I've been following for a long time, which is the way political candidates are trying to harness bloggers. They're concerned about the effects bloggers might have on them, the power that they have, this sort of unwieldy, wild power that we have as they go into the campaign. And we know that the Hillary Clinton campaign hired Peter Dow of Salon.com to sort of be the liaison with the bloggers. I call it the blogger wrangler, basically to try to do things to get bloggers not to hurt the campaign or to help it. So it was pretty clear to me that that luncheon was set up, not just as, oh, isn't it nice that some bloggers are having lunch with Clinton, but that this was a very instrumental thing that was about trying to get, kind of sort of defuse the bloggers and tame the bloggers so that they would help and not be dangerous. Now, one of my big issues is the independence of bloggers and the vigor that they bring to the political system. I don't like the idea that the blogger wrangler will get his way. And here these bloggers went to lunch, and many of them posted about the lunch, and they said things like, oh, how intelligent, and he was really interested in us. And wow, his blue, one of the male bloggers even said that was like gushing over Clinton's blue eyes, and they were talking about
okay,
how
but
they
Ann,
had
but Ann, none
chicken
of this is
it.
The stuff that set people off, I mean, right?
Right.
I mean, this
but
is not
Bob,
the stuff
me,
that got
but,
people
right.
mad. And I think, I don't even think we've explained, if there are any uninitiated viewers out there, I don't think we've even clearly explained what part of your argument or speculation actually got them upset.
Okay.
So
well,
can I just give yeah, my
but
version?
Bob, I have to say this, which is, this is why I got mad in the Garance situation. It was because I knew it would take a long time to explain, and I didn't think it was right to use blogging heads to get the whole story out in a way that would explain it from my point of view. She presented it as a, you know, a four-word, you know, meme, which was used to frame me and hurt me, and I said, you know, there's a whole context to this that could be explained, but I'm not going to do that. I don't think I can impose. I don't think I can misappropriate so much blogging head's time to explain that. And now you have me on the show and ask me to go into it. And as I start to go into it, you interrupt me and say, oh, no, 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 no. It's sort of like, oh, well, don't take up all of that time. Well, see, this is the problem. To explain what I did and to have people see it in the context rather than framed in that ugly meme that is designed to, you know, harass and hurt me, I have to present it in some kind of a context. So, you know, either I do it or I don't do it.
Okay, I think you've established that there was a larger set of thoughts flowing through your mind when you said the thing that got them upset.
Which
but
was
I,
what?
I would like to say a little...
What was the thing that got them upset?
Was that?
What was the precise thing you're referring
to? Okay. I would like to give my version of that and say why I actually kind of see their point and didn't think your interpretation of the photograph stood up to scrutiny. And so, you know, if you give me a couple of minutes, I'll do that. I should say, you know, first of all, that I feel kind of, I mean, in theory, I you know, if you're going to present your side of the story, I guess I'm not the one person who should be on the other side of the screen. I mean, in theory, to the extent that this is you versus Jessica, maybe it should be here. And I would just say, if she ever wants to come on Blogging Heads with you or with anybody else, fine. But okay, for now, but all I can do now is present my own perspective. And basically, as I understand it, you initially blogged about this photograph. And first of all, I mean, of course.
So I initially blogged about the fact of the luncheon and the way Clinton was wrangling the bloggers successfully, and the bloggers were being duped and allowing themselves to be seduced and brought
right.
in too easily. And then I just put up the picture and made a wisecrack, let's just arrange these bloggers randomly.
And what did you mean when you said that? It was kind of an obscure comment.
That's a lot of things. Basically, it meant that they put the sort of nerdy, doughy guys in the back where you couldn't even see them, and large parts of their faces were covered up, and the, you know, the women were put in front and were more attractive, and the most, I don't know if it was the most attractive woman, but the woman that caught your eye was right in the middle and right in front of Clinton. And also, I think that she looked enough like Monica Lewinsky that it was unfortunate for her to be positioned right in front of Clinton. And as many people pointed out, you could see that Clinton was looking at her chest. That was visually apparent in the picture.
Well, that's,
looks
first
like
of
it.
All, it's not her fault. It doesn't speak to her motivation.
No, but I'm not, I wasn't talking about
and
what
And I don't
she,
know if it's true either. Bob, I didn't notice that when I looked at the picture.
Let me finish a sentence.
And you finished a lot of sentences. An objective review of what we've done so far would show you talking for about 75 to 80% of the time. But go ahead.
Right. Okay. Don't get mad at me. I could get mad, too. and we have to have our simultaneous flare-up. But the thing is, everybody keeps talking about me. I declined to give the context previously because I thought there wasn't time. And so if you want me to explain that, I'm trying to speak quickly. I'm trying to get it out quickly.
I should also say that my camcorder just said change the battery pack. So it should things stop suddenly, that would be the reason, not because we edited out a flare-up. But go ahead.
The original post wasn't about what she was doing. It was about the entire picture and something that was unfortunate about. I thought it was funny because in this effort to wrangle the bloggers and get them to help Hillary Clinton, they ended up with a picture that would cause the viewer to think about Monica Lewinsky. You know, and that was just by accident, or she was put in the middle or whatever. But I thought it was funny that in trying to use Clinton for the aid of Hillary Clinton, that they ended up with an image that would call to mind all these things about Clinton that are completely not helpful to Hillary Clinton. In fact, enough so that I think that Jessica could have actually been someone who hated Hillary Clinton and was kind of trying to screw up the campaign.
Okay, fine.
You know, not that I'm accusing her of doing that, but I'm saying that a dirty trickster could
have
done that.
Well, you did accuse her of a certain amount of intentionality. Eventually, whatever you said in the first post, eventually you said some things like this. Then when she goes to meet Clinton, she wears a tight-knit top that draws attention to her breasts and stands right in front of him and positions herself to make her breasts as obvious as possible.
Right.
And then you say at one point to her, it's obvious that you're bending over backwards, figuratively and literally, keep the attention on your breasts.
Yeah,
now, let me just say, I mean, when I looked at that picture, that's not what I get. She is doing one of these three-quarter turns that people often do in those kinds of pictures,
and in fact some other people
in that picture are doing. But there are two rows of people. She's facing, the three-quarter turn is toward the center. Mm-hmm. There's no reasonable basis for speculation that there's anything weird going on. And a tight-knit sweater, well, look, if I were a woman, really wanted to call attention to my breasts, I think I'd wear a low-cut dress. She wasn't doing that. I mean, how many different forms of clothing are there that you would have indicted her for? Can I just say one more thing, which I think, and I mean, the reason this strikes me strange is you're a law professor, and it just seems to me your standards of evidence are not what I would expect, and it seems to me the kind of best. The crystallization of this is you at some point compare it to, you know, somebody had made fun of, I guess Jon Stewart on The Daily Show had made fun of,
Catherine
you know,
Harris.
Florida recount Dragon Lady Catherine Harris.
Right.
And what you say is the three-quarter pose and related posturing, the sort of thing people razz Catherine Harris about.
Right.
Now, if you look at that video of Catherine Harris, it's completely different in the following sense. She is doing an on-camera shot. She's being introduced. She's being interviewed by a TV guy. Normally, people just look at the camera. She's, like, looking at the camera, and she's turned like this in a way that does so. It's completely bizarre. That's never done in situations like that.
I agree that
whereas
that's
what
much
Jessica Belinny does is something people always do in situations like that. So, first of all, it just seems to me that, it's one thing.
You left out some connective material that makes me look much worse than I should. And number one, I'm not being a law professor when I write on the blog. I'm being a sort of a satirical, creative writer who's doing something bloggy, and it's about blogging. It's not in my role as law professor, number one. And so the words like indict and I should have a higher standard of evidence, that's not, no, my standard is what is the standard for a creative writer writing satire, etc.,
etc. Well, wait,
I have one more thing I have to say, which is that you've skipped ahead to the second post, whereas in the first post, where I was just talking about the effect of the whole picture, she showed up and started commenting. And in that, I said, she said, well, that's me. I'm the person you're saying looks like Monica Lewinsky. And I said, well, Jessica, you do appear to be posing. Maybe it's just an accident. And she wrote back, it's a picture. People pose. If I pose, so basically she is saying, I did pose. Okay?
Well, we all pose in pictures like that.
Right.
And we all have an idea of what a flattering pose for us is. And we all get in the habit when posing for pictures of, you know, I think by and large, men get some idea of how they would pose that would conform to ideals of male attractiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And females do the corresponding
thing.
I really
don't
know. That doesn't mean she was sitting there thinking, oh, I hope the president is looking at a certain part of my anatomy.
But wait a minute. No. Here's the thing. I don't think it's bad for people to pose. I don't think it's bad for women to dress attractively. I wear knit tops myself. I think well, maybe if you don't want people to look at your breasts, there are different ways you can dress. You can wear a jacket. Women commonly wear a jacket in professional situations. I mean, I don't myself, and I don't really have anything against her. I'm not saying that it was bad for her to pose, and I don't, and to the extent that it looks like I'm saying that what she was doing was the same as what Catherine Harris did, I'm not saying that. I am saying that how women dress and pose is something that you can crack jokes about and that you can say it created this impression of looking like Monica Lewinsky. But a key thing that I wanted to say was that what set me off was that I went to her blog and I saw these images and I saw that, look, this is a woman who uses the physical women's breasts, basically, as her stock and trade.
Well, she has
this tote bag that she sells, and it has this image of the woman with the breasts.
Well, but
so come on, that's funny. Can you at least, Bob, even if you object, can you at least see why I thought it was funny?
Oh, I can see why maybe you thought it was funny, fine, but you do make substantive claims at some point. It seems to me that is what the argument about. She was never denying that she sells tote bags with whatever they have on them. You said, you know, she goes to meet Clint, she wears a tight knit top that draws attention to her breasts and stands right in front of him and positions herself to make her breasts as obvious. That is a substantive claim about her frame of mind, and the question arises, is there sufficient evidence to base it on? I think not at all.
The evidence was the combination of having a blog that was festooned with breasts and then going into a situation where she would be very visible and dressing in a way that called attention to her figure. And I'm not saying that it's wrong to do that. I'm just saying that I think women know what they're wearing. Women know how they look.
Of course.
They look in a mirror.
And they want to look attractive, of course.
They are very aware of how their breasts look in their clothes. And I'm not saying you shouldn't try to make your breasts look great.
Every day. I'm not just when they meet the president.
You know that
people try to dress attractively, of course.
And it's not wrong. It's not wrong, but it's true. It's not false.
Well,
this is a person who
has
a book called Full Frontal Feminism that has a nude woman on the front, not all the breasts and everything. She uses a silhouette of a busty woman, two of them at the top of her blog that is the first thing you see when you go to her blog. She sells a tote bag with the same silhouette. She had posts on her blog at the time when I was writing those posts that had a cut shot of just from the neck down showing the chest of a woman with a tight t-shirt on. And that was that's what I saw of her blog. So to me, I put two and two together. That was maybe too impressionistic. But basically, here's this woman. Here she is in this picture. She looks different from all the other bloggers. Here's her blog. It's got breasts all over it.
She didn't look different from all the other. Some of the other bloggers in that picture, as I recall, are doing the three-quarter turn the way people often do in a picture exactly like that. Are you saying she was the only person in the picture doing the three-quarter?
I think she looked different from the others, yes.
Wait. Are you saying none of the others were doing the standard three-quarter turn?
I don't know that I ever said three-quarter.
Well, what do you say? I mean, I'm just asking. You're saying she looks different from all the other blogs. The fact is, as I recall that picture, she's not the only one. It's commonly done in pictures.
Okay, can I ask? The way she was dressed and the way she had her back.
There are a million more salacious ways she could have dressed. There are tons of more revealing ways she could have dressed.
But it's not a huge deal. You know, it's not that big of a thing. But I think how women dress, how everyone dresses, is an important subject. Do you read Robin Givhan in The Washington Post, the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist who always writes about fashion and politics?
No.
Well, she won the Pulitzer.
I should, if you won the Pulitzer Prize. I'm sorry, but I don't.
I link to her all the time. I think the subject of women and political power and how women dress, how women present themselves visually, is an important subject for serious writing, for feminist writing, for political writing, and for satirical writing. And I've been doing that. I do that a lot. Now, maybe I concede that I was was too mean to her, but it was, I was interacting with her in a way that made me feel like, you know, hitting back because of some things that she said to me. I thought she was, sort of flattering herself and being coy in a way that, you know, rubbed me the wrong way. Maybe, you know, and I'll concede that I overreacted, and I don't think she was really doing that much. But I thought, given that she runs a blog that is, as I always say, festooned with breasts, that I thought it was fair to say that and was good comedy. And I considered the whole thing rather comic and a small thing.
Okay.
That's my perspective.
That sounded like the beginning of a diplomatic overture from you. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but if we could, maybe if we're going to move on to the next subject,
can I just say, I don't think she's a bad person. I don't have a problem with women having breasts. I think women should dress attractively, and I'd like to see more of it, in fact. But I also think an important part of the world, and I think you would agree with me on this, that an important part of the world is how people look. People's faces, people's clothes. The beauty of women is a huge part of the world.
Yeah.
And we can talk, and we should be able to talk about it. I think that we shouldn't be too puritanical and repressive about it.
I got
accused of being repressive as if I was the one that thought women should wear burkas or women should always hide under a bag and things
that.
But that's not true at all.
No.
I think they're more puritanical than I am and much more repressive. I would like to talk about these things and laugh and joke about more of these things.
Okay, let's talk about the larger issues. Now, I will just close by saying my understanding was that a lot of the controversy was whether your substantive conjecture about her frame of mind was on the mark. To me, it seems not to have been, and I don't see there being evidence in that picture such that a reasonable person could, with any confidence, make the speculation you made. But
it looks like maybe it's an accident. It looks like you're posing, it reflects you, that it was apparent behavior. Maybe it just looks that way to me. But it seemed to me that she was doing a little bit of a archback kind of a deal, just a little. But I think that's an important, and it's an important subject in feminism, is how women choose to present themselves, especially when they're in the area of women, of male power. And what's more male power than a president? I mean, I think back to when Marilyn Monroe did the Happy Birthday, Mr. President, and remember how she dressed?
Well, yeah, but I think at the time she had a relationship with him, right? I mean, Marilyn Monroe is... Yeah.
Well, and of course, that's the extreme, but obviously we can talk about that and joke about that, and that's an important subject in politics and feminism and just being a person who's aware of the world and talking about all the details.
Yeah. No.
And I've never tried to be like a completely serious political blogger. I started writing about politics. The first thing I ever wrote about a political candidate, I did one of my New York Times columns about this, was just some silly thing about how I read that Wesley Clark only had 5% body fat. And I joked about that and, did some riffing on that. And, the first time the New York Times ever quoted me writing about a political candidate, I was simul-blogging a debate between Bush and Kerry, and I said, Bush has a glob of spittle forming in the corner of his mouth. That's going to lose the women voters. So, that's the typical kind of thing I would do. I look at things. I notice things. I feel like I notice some things other people don't notice. And I say comic things about that,
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question. Is there underlying this an issue on the landscape of feminism? In other words, is there something substantive that you disagree about with Jessica Valenti? Or even if it doesn't relate to this, can you just tell me, clue me in to the... I don't know that much about the landscape of feminist discourse. Where do you stand compared to what is represented by her blog, Feminist?
I guess I come from an older generation of feminists that were more radical feminists who were interested in the anti-pornography things and were interested in... I was very influenced by reading Feminism Unmodified by Catherine MacKinnon, which was talked about sex in terms of, as something that... The way we understand sex as being something that is... basically a construction of male power and male power relationships, and that what we think is sexy or erotic is actually a kind of a domination of women that we need to become aware of. And I feel like the more recent generation has gotten flattened out, has lost some of the insights, has gotten so into this idea of talking about sex in a positive way as just a fun, happy thing that we can do. I think that lost this essential insight that MacKinnon had. That sex is about a power, that sex as we live it and understand it is something that's constructed out of male desires and that we need to be aware of that. She talked about how female sexuality was the eroticization of domination. I thought that was a really important insight. I think it's been lost by women who are younger women who are interested in being sex positive. And when I look at the Feministing blog and see those silhouettes of the male style, the mudflap woman, I feel like, well, they have accepted the sort of playboy model of a woman, and that we've lost something that was very important. And I think Clinton was central to that loss. I think people who were Democrats and wanted to preserve Clinton's power let a lot of things go behind and become forgotten in an effort to preserve the interests of the Democratic Party. And I have a lot of hostility to Bill Clinton. I don't have hostility to you, but I have a lot of hostility to Bill Clinton.
That was a
Freudian slip.
Or two,
I cop to it. But, you know, in other words, I think something important was lost, and I think that there are younger women who are, I don't know Jessica's writing, so I'm not saying that she has this, but I think that there are a lot of these supposed third-wave feminists who have basically just kind of merged with Democratic Party issues like reproductive rights and things like that, and, you know, equal pay, which are, you know, nice issues, good issues, but I think the more profound insights are not being seen anymore. And I think Bill Clinton was a big part of eclipsing that. And then to see the feminists sidle up to him and be so pleased to be in his presence and his blue eyes and his southern
chicken.
Well,
the male bloggers were pleased to be in his presence.
Right,
that's the way power works.
Right.
We're all pleased to be in the presence of it, you know?
Right, but I think they probably consider themselves feminists, too. But I just think something important was lost in feminism when it got merged with Democratic Party interests during the Clinton presidency. And seeing those feminists posing next to Clinton bugged the hell out of me because of that. That's important to me. And
okay,
I think that's a very serious issue. That's not just horsing around and joking.
Okay, but it bugging you depends on a certain interpretation of the picture. And let's just leave
you know,
the
Bob, I'm willing to concede that she didn't do anything at all. I'm happy to say to her as a generous overture that I'm fine with her and all the other women having breasts, that I think she was just standing there in a way that was needed to form the photograph. And it was just an accidental impression that I was able to see because I have this whole set of ideas about feminism and Clinton and so forth. So I'm not trying to impose any kind of intentionality on her.
I'm perfectly
willing to concede all
I think this is a diplomatic breakthrough.
Yes, and I'm happy to do that. I really don't I don't want to hurt her, and I actually feel, I didn't put her name in the post that I wrote, you know. She's concerned. She wrote in The Guardian. She's concerned because her name comes up in Google searches for breasts or whatever, or booby gate or something like that. But I never used those terms, and I didn't even use her name. Her name got Google searchable that way because of what people who were attacking me were saying.
Which is good. I mean, maybe we can get you two together on Blogging Heads for the
I really have nothing against her, and I'm really interested in, the feminist issues. I wanted to talk to... That's why I agreed to do the Blogging Heads with Garance. I wanted to talk about it. I don't have any problem with Garance either. You know, I also think that Garance just kind of bumbled into using that meme that I'm sure she's heard a lot and just didn't have any insight into why it would bug the hell out of me as it did.
Okay, so on this issue of old versus new feminism...
Yeah.
So in a way, you're saying that, leaving that picture aside, but one thing that you're skeptical of, if not opposed to, is when women use their kind of perceived attractiveness or their sexual assets as perceived by men. Okay, Anne, you there?
Yes.
The battery on my camcorder did die. It turns out I had somehow unplugged it. I think what I was saying was, so you're kind of, you don't like the idea of women doing something that they can certainly do in the world if they want to, which is to use their kind of sexual assets as instruments of influence and power by virtue of the attraction that men have to the assets, right? I mean...
In what context? In the biz... In the...
Well, in the extreme crass case, let's talk about, say, what is it called? The director's couch in Hollywood? That's not the term, is it? But you know what I mean.
Well, obviously, I think in some situations, like an entertainer would use sexuality. It depends on the situation. Or if you're going on a date with someone, you certainly should.
In your career, I mean, I'm just asking if I'm interpreting the issue right. Are you saying that...
I certainly think a woman, like what Monica Lewinsky did, a woman who gives sexual favors and gets something in return and jumps over other women in the process or other men, is doing something wrong. Yes.
Actually, I'm not sure she was mainly motivated by career ambition, but who knows.
But she got things that other people didn't get.
I know one thing she got that some other people didn't get, but...
Right, she got help getting a job. She had Vernon Jordan helping her get a job. There were other women, and it's sort of like... I don't think attractive women should get things that... I think everyone should be well-groomed and nice. There's certain ways you want to dress in the workplace. There's some things go too far. Some things... some people don't get aren't well-groomed enough, and some people overdo it. But, you know, it's hard to figure out how to dress properly in the workplace. It depends on what kind of work you do, too.
But this kind of ideological...
It's actually a hardcore ideology about it, obviously. But I don't think that women should give sexual favors.
Well, no, but that's the extreme case. There's also just the question of dress. I mean, Rosa Brooks got into this... recently in a dialogue with Mark Schmidt about how ambivalent she felt when she saw students of hers, female students, you know, kind of dressing to kill. And I think, you know, she kind of had the impulse almost to, you know, kind of put some lapels on them and kind of say, don't you understand you're kind of selling out the cause to the extent that you put yourself out there as a sex object?
I don't judge women as selling out the cause by dressing up.
Well, I'm putting words
in her
mouth, too.
It depends on what the situation is. I mean, I think if I were going to lunch with the president, I would probably want to wear a jacket, especially if it was a president who was notorious for his lecherous, you know, character.
Yeah.
So it depends on the context, you know.
Okay.
And I think women should try to be attractive. Often if a woman is somewhat attractive or tries to dress to be attractive, other women will judge her very harshly and will act like she's doing some big thing and using her sexuality. I think that's wrong. Yeah. I don't do that. I like to see people look good, and I wish people would look better. There are too many people that don't look good enough. I'd like to see them look better. I'm not going to criticize the ones that look good. But I think there's a certain kind of sort of simpering or behavior that isn't good. On the other hand, I get accused of that myself. I've noticed in comments on Blogging Heads that there are people who think that I'm posing on camera and that I'm doing all of this whatever. I could find some old comments like that. So it's similar to what you were saying I was doing with respect to Jessica, that I was seeing behavior in her that she wasn't doing. But you look at some of the comments about me on Blogging Heads. There are people like, oh, I can't stand Althaus. She's always her endless posing and this and that. You know, well, what are they really seeing? I mean, what am I doing? Why are they seeing it? You know, a lot of it's pretty darn subjective.
Yeah, I mean, my view is we're all posing more or less all the time. But you know, in the world of business, I mean, I think I understand a little better now some of the kind of ideological context of the whole controversy, but you know, I mean, men in a way use assets unrelated to their actual quality as workers for advancement. I mean, for example,
like height.
Yeah, I mean, jockiness, athleticism.
Right.
Men are impressed by athletic men.
And some men will intimidate women by getting up, especially if they're bigger, they will sometimes come up and be in your space, and they're not really doing anything you could actually tell them that was wrong. But
right.
You should be sensitive. You should be aware that this person is trying to influence you or trying to control you. Now, if you said, look, you're trying to push me around, you're trying to bully me, the person would be all offended, and you actually would be rude of you to say it, but you should know it. You can tell when people are doing things like that. There are all kinds of subtle things people do. I mean, there wouldn't be novels if human behavior like that wasn't something, you know? But I'm not
right.
trying to be unrepressive. I am not being puritanical about this. And I'm for beauty and a high level of aesthetics, and I like to see, you know, I like to see people figure out how to look good. I like to, you know, I'm pretty liberal about different ways of looking good, but, you know, I like people to have some style and individuality.
Okay. I applaud those things. I'm just trying to think if there are other things. I mean, we had talked about a few things. We want to talk about IMUS. We want to talk about, Nancy Pelosi. I'm trying to think if there are other things related to this.
Why was that 1 minute of me getting upset so incredibly interesting to people that it got talked about in repeated episodes of Blogging Heads, and that people just, I mean, people say that I freaked out. But from my perspective, and I saw that minute many times, I thought, yeah, I get passionate, but you know why? You know, what's wrong with that? You know, we're having a debate. It got vigorous, you know. It looked more vigorous than it was, in part because Garance didn't fight back like, you know, Jonah Goldberg did in that old one. But basically, what was it? It was like pornography for nerds or something like that. They got all excited about it.
Yeah, that's our motto. That's a good one. Pornography for nerds. Blogging Hits TV, pornography for nerds.
But I mean, I felt like they thought I freaked out. I felt like they freaked out. They reacted so much. What are they reacting to? What is their problem?
I mean, first of all, you know, after being kind of critical of your interpretation of that picture, I should say that I fundamentally sympathize with your predicament, because I myself have been known to get emotional in response to the, what I might call, provocations of Mickey Cow.
And it's good video. I think it's good theater.
It's good video,
I like
but I mean, I understand why people, it isn't emotion per se that is getting me grief. It's when the emotion becomes of a kind that leads people to say, this guy's slightly unhinged. And I can see a couple of episodes where that was a not totally crazy interpretation.
We know you're not unhinged.
What?
We know you're not unhinged.
Well, you know, I mean...
Would you rather be a cold fish? Is that better? I mean, I think... I'm not going to name any names, but some people on Blogging Heads
names, please.
Some people on Blogging Heads are just very dull. You know, it's sort of like, why are we even looking at a picture? We could just have a still. You know, I'd like to see
sometimes
a little more animation.
Sometimes we do, actually. When their computers aren't very powerful, we do have a still sometimes.
And sometimes the camera goes into demo mode. That adds a little action. Some people are better off when they start rotating on an axis or whatever.
But I mean, the answer is, you know, it's like people... Well, first of all, the context was, you're right, there are a lot of people out there who didn't like you to begin with. They welcomed an opportunity to ridicule you, but the perception was that there was insufficient provocation to warrant your reaction, which is sometimes the perception with me and Mickey.
That's why I'm glad to have a chance to explain it. And I was boxed in because I felt that I had to respond, but I couldn't take the time to respond. I felt that I had been, you know... You used the word ambush, but I felt that I had been attacked in a way that people couldn't understand and that I saw it. It's like somebody came in and stuck a dagger in my side, but nobody else saw it. I had to react to that. Now,
well,
I'm not saying she deliberately stuck a dagger in my side, but to me,
that was your interpretation.
That was a dagger. She may not have known that was a dagger, but if she knew the whole context of the attacks and the framing with that meme, she would have... She probably wouldn't have said it, but I think people watching the video don't understand. What is it? Why does Olga suddenly just flip out like that? What is that? What was said? You know.
Well, I think that was the perception.
I hope they understand it now.
Okay, and on the issue of you know, why left wing bloggers hate you, my own, you know, you don't have to take my advice. My own sense is that the more you talk about how much they hate you, the more they will hate you.
Oh, I actually think they should hate me. I've changed my position on that.
No. So you're like Bush in the insurgency. Bring it on.
Well, I actually think it's part of being, you know, like a prominent blogger who talks about politics is that some people have to be very against you. I mean, you can't just straddle the fence and make everyone love you. And part of getting, you know, making things happen is getting somebody to push back against you. So it's not necessarily bad. And I'd rather have a strong reaction than just blah, you know. And, you know, I think it's theater. I mean, part of it is, you know, I'm not really a political blogger like these mainstream media associated with a particular magazine kind of bloggers are. I'm doing a kind of a comic thing, you know, as I have up in my banner, you know, legal scholarship is performance art. I basically have an artist's attitude toward this. You know, I feel like I'm doing a kind of a performance. I hope I'm not a big phony, and I do feel that I'm expressing something genuine about myself. But it's a kind of a theater. I feel that I'm doing something with my personality here. I feel like I'm doing something different than all the other people on Blogging Heads. So if there's a sort of which one of these Blogging Heads is not like the others, I want to be that person, and I think I am that person.
Okay.
Do you mind?
So you're either the what's wrong with this picture or the what's right with this picture, depending on how you look at it.
Not like who doesn't belong? So if people think Altus doesn't belong on Blogging, and she's not doing what the others do, that's true. I'm the wild card. I'm the joker in the deck. And I'm doing that on purpose. I'm not just like, why doesn't Althaus calm down and act like a regular... Like in Garance's Blogging Heads with... Who is she with? Oh, Eric Alterman that went up today. She's saying
your
something like,
Eric,
if Althaus wants to be taken seriously as a political blogger, then she shouldn't have a photograph of a building where she talks about whether it's a phallic symbol. Actually, I talk about it being a vulva symbol, so she didn't read that closely enough. But I talk about imagery, I joke, I do different kinds of things. So I'm not trying to be a serious political blogger. And when legal scholars talk about my blog, and when we talk about these issues, they want to make blogging more like legal scholarship, and I'm always completely on the other side, and people will talk about me and say, how can she be a law professor? How can a law professor blog like that? But that's, you know, part of what I'm doing is I'm not being a political blogger like them, and I'm not being a law professor blogger like them. I'm doing something different, and it's a creative enterprise, and maybe it's crap, but, you know, I'm a frustrated artist, and I went to art school many years ago and graduating in the early 70s, and I was a failed artist, and I went to law school, and I've been frustrated for 20 years, man. And so whatever I'm doing, it's really important to me, and I know what I'm doing, and I mean to do it. And if people don't like it, that's just fine, because it means so much to me that I've got to do it.
Okay.
That's my
But you're not saying that the Garance thing was intentional performance art.
Everything,
that was a spontaneous reaction.
No, it's not. Some people say she's acting. If I was more in control, I would have toned it down.
I don't think you're that good an actor, with all due respect.
Right, that would be great acting, wouldn't it? But it's sort of like if I wanted to be the serious political blogger or someone that everyone would look at and say, oh, that's a law professor, I would dial it down. I would do other things. I'd be more stoical. I'd repress myself. But I'm about a kind of expression that I intend to do and I mean to do and I go ahead and do it. And that includes not, you know, going, you know, just before I get really mad, I say something like, I will stand my ground. And then she does something, interrupts me in a way that makes me then have this flow of emotion, which, mm-hmm. I mean to do that. I'm not like, oh, why did you go? I gotta not go crazy like that again. I mean to do that.
So you're a no regrets.
Nope.
That's good.
I don't back down. I go forward, and it's all part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I'm a phony. But I am. I do feel that I'm. I have like an artistic sensibility. Maybe it's crap, but it's just everything to me.
Now, you realize you're playing into one of the stereotypes here of the Ann haters out there. I mean, one thing you read in the comments section and on the critical side is it's always all about Ann. And this is one of the differences. You know, the other blogging heads and bloggers talk about politics. Ann talks about Ann's interior life.
The other blogging heads talk about me. They talk about me, too. You wanted to do this
one. Well, you've become part of politics, I guess. But in any event, they don't talk about themselves is the point. The claim is you spend a lot more time talking about yourself and your interior life.
It's called blogging heads. And what is blogging? This whole personal element is important to blogging. I do my blog from a personal point of view. So if I'm the blogger on blogging heads, this element of the personal is going to be there. I want it to be there. I wish I could be matched up with someone who was more like me, who did more personal things like I do.
I have, you know, I've made the offer. You find anyone in the world and we'll try to get a camera to them.
You know, I know.
There's billions of people in the world, Ann.
I'm looking for more. This is my frustration of my whole life. I wish I could find more people who like to talk about things the way I like to talk about things.
There must be someone out there.
Interlocutor. Well, I like talking to you. I think you're pretty good.
Oh, that's nice.
And you've made it personal. You made your New York Times columns so personal. I liked that. I know Mickey gave you a hard time about that. You wrote about your father and...
He didn't give me too hard a time. In the end, I was surprised. I mean, we should say by background, I am doing what you were doing a couple of months ago, I guess. You were a guest columnist for Times, which means doing two columns a week for a month.
Yeah.
I am one this month. And actually, the truth is, I got that idea. I was reading one of your columns that was first person, and I thought, oh, well, this would be an
option. Was it the one about Wesley Clark's body fat and talking to my son?
I guess that's true.
Well, actually, I brought a personal element into kind of all of them, I think.
Yeah, a number of them were. And I always, you know, the things I'd written at the Times had always been op-eds per se. And you think, okay, here's my argument, present my argument. And I realized, when you've actually got a column, you can do what you want.
That's what they want. I mean, when I was talking to the editor about how to do it, there was this whole thing about don't try to be like the other columnists. Be yourself, you know, this is why we want you. And you know how to do it. And that was all referring to how I write on my blog. So I have a certain style of writing about culture and politics and myself and blending it together. And I feel like I know what I'm doing. And that's what I mean to do. It's not because I've, you know, people might say, oh, she's a big egotist. Why doesn't she just become a more objective sort of a geek kind of a person? I don't know. But that's not what I do. I do what I do. And I've been doing it since I started blogging in January 2004. And I mean to do it. And I like it. I wish more people would do it. So
okay.
I'm glad you were inspired to do that. Did you like writing like that?
I actually kind of do. It's very treacherous to write about yourself at all.
Right, there's something stressful about it. You kind of feel like you're walking on
edge. And it's hard to do it in a way that doesn't seem self-involved, and I'm never sure that I've accomplished that.
So, like, this criticism that gets aimed at me, oh, it's all about her, then you feel like, well, if I do this, if I bring in the personal element, then people might say that about me. And, you know, it's like, this is, again, the Puritanism. I think there's something puritanical in American culture, where you're not supposed to have it be about you, even though American culture, it's, you know, people are very selfish and egotistical, but there is some idea that you're supposed to, you know, be self-effacing or something like that. I think I'm self-effacing when I talk about myself, though. I don't, like, go around saying I'm great. I mean, I make all these concessions. I say they're welcome to hate me, and, you know, I'm a frustrated artist, and maybe it's crap. You know, I say lots of self-effacing things. I think some of the people that won't talk about themselves and who just talk like the voice of God or something like that, or the voice of the ultimate expert in their field, why isn't that viewed as self-aggrandizing?
Well, true. I mean, there's a certain pompousness in kind of ordinary TV that we try to avoid when we can.
Yeah, that's what I like about blogging. And, you know, you call it blogging heads, so the heads ought to be kind of bloggier than the people on TV.
Yeah,
and that means
absolutely
something personal, something with some individuality and eccentricity. That's what I would like to see.
Totally. Now, speaking of some of this stuff, we were going to talk about... You pointed me to this New York Times story about somebody wanting to do some kind of blogger code.
Oh, yeah, New York Times had a front page story on a movement. There's actually some of the people who have a wiki up to try to develop a set of rules of ethics for bloggers, as if there's this very specific problem in the blogosphere that needs to be solved. There was a high-profile case of a woman who really was harassed in a way that requires police investigation because she was getting real death threats. So that's, to me, that's different from everything else. And mm-hmm. to use that case as leverage for saying that, oh, there's just too much nastiness in the blogosphere and things need to be made nice and we need to adopt codes and control things. You know, I made fun of Eric Alterman for saying something like, we need a blogger council. We need to have people who can condemn people. You know, there's this whole movement. I don't know where that all really started, but there's a whole movement about trying to have some enforced standards in the blogosphere. And
Although when I read the New York Times piece you steered me to, I was struck by how kind of minimal the things that seemed to be suggested were. Maybe I read it too fast, but it seemed to be things like, well, bloggers should have the right to delete comments.
Yes.
Yeah. Bloggers should have the right to insist that there be no anonymous comments. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you don't need a code for that. Bloggers have that right. Yeah.
Need a code. That's a culture would work, would evolve in its own way. And what's great about blogging is that it has this ability to evolve and be something. You know, not because of imposed rules, but because of the way people behave in a culture and create a culture.
Yeah,
I'm sure you would have more to say about that than I could. That sounds like it's something you would...
Well, I mean, you know what it kind of codes, what that kind of leads to that I wanted to talk about mm-hmm. a little is IMUS, right?
Yeah.
I mean, code, unwritten and written codes.
Yeah. Well, he's subject to the FCC.
So what's that?
So he's broadcast media, so they're...
That's true, and of course we are in this age of transition where, we're talking about Don Imus, and of course is the comments he made about the Rutgers women's basketball
right.
team. And he's having to pay penance for that.
Yeah.
We're in this period of transition where audio and video media are moving from a realm that used to be thought of as warranting regulation.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, there was a finite amount of spectrum, of bandwidth. You know,
mm-hmm.
there could only be so many TV channels. This goes back to before cable, even.
Mm-hmm.
There could only be so many radio stations. So the government got in the business of handing out licenses, and that gave the government the power to... You know, say, to insist on certain standards.
Right.
Like
you're supposed to be broadcasting in the public interest, and then
right.
they can
now,
define what that is.
And you know, now we're in this period of transition where, you know, I think that's basically becoming untenable because, look, Don Imus can just broadcast over the Internet if he wants to.
Yeah, except there's some people only have radios or out in their cars, things
well,
like
right.
that.
Well, right, it's still a higher value proposition, and that's one reason he's under pressure. He generates so much advertising
right.
revenue
right.
that he's feeling a little heat because he could really lose some advertisers. What did you think of the comments themselves and... and whether or not they warranted what, you know, what he's gotten is a 2-week suspension, and he's having to go around and apologize a bunch.
I think it's, you know, considering all the crap that's out there and all the different things he's said, it's kind of odd that this is the one thing that's chosen. It seems to be something that is happening a lot these days, that you finally catch the person you don't like saying the one word or the two words that you can then milk for all it's worth. And he just said those words, you know?
Well, at first, I meant to look up the word nappy before it came on, because at first, he said, you know, oh, aren't these women unattractive, which is a totally gratuitous, gross thing to
I
say.
I thought he was saying something like, aren't they really tough? Aren't they, like, hardcore tough? And they, which in a certain way could be seen as a compliment, although it's put in a crude way.
Well, the paraphrases in the reporting certainly had him saying they were unattractive, right? But anyway, the phrase that was quoted was, you know, nappy-headed hoes. Now, it's hard to characterize because it's not a classic racial slur. In other words, that's not something that racists...
Well, nappy-headed is clearly a reference to the hair of a black person.
Right, I guess so. Now, that it means kind of like woolly in texture or something?
Maybe like kinky-headed. But nappy is a very particular word that is, you know, commonly used to insult
people. See, that's what pushes it over the... I mean, before that, when I mean, first of all, I don't know, is it a phrase, nappy-headed, is that a whole phrase that has itself been used by inner-city blacks in some rap song or something? I couldn't tell. I mean,
oh,
did he just...
I guess we could find out by Googling. I haven't done that. Obviously, but, hose is a popular...
Well, right, but see, the hose part, the racial, the derogatory racial thing about that is he's kind of making fun of the language of some inner-city black people. So that's kind of racial, but it's not as if hoes is a word
sexist.
That refers strictly to black people, as far as I know.
He's insulting women, though, at that point.
Well, right. I mean, there's that, but that's not the way it's being interpreted so much. I mean, I think the racist angle is the most played up. But I do think now that it was only today that I got clear on the meaning of nappy, and now it seems to me to be, yes, clearly, in the aggregate, a racial
and
slur.
And he admits it, and he's apologized repeatedly. He did this whole pilgrimage to Al Sharpton's radio show, and didn't go on for like 3 hours. I mean, at some point, hasn't he apologized enough? I sort of feel like, and you know, some people are saying, oh, he's ruined the success of these young women and all of this stuff. But, you know, I think... they're strong women. They should just say he's a jerk. Screw him and not let him ruin their joy in life.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that in a multi-ethnic society, given how explosive ethnic fault lines can be, and I mean, look at Iraq. I mean, some people think Iraq is that's just this weird, you know, Iraqi culture or Arab culture or Muslim culture or something. I mean, the fact is, history shows you again and again that under certain conditions, any set of ethnic fault lines can become pretty epic. And so I do think it's important in a multi-ethnic society that you do sanction derogatory speech like this, informally,
but
not the government.
But anytime you put something off limits, then people who are comedians, who are shock jocks, who are pushing the envelope, that's what they're going to push. So if you do one thing, the other thing is going to happen too. Now, you can punish the hell out of Imus, but it'll cause Howard Stern, who's not on broadcast radio, who's on satellite radio. Howard Stern is probably mocking him right now, if he's on, and he'll do even more things. So it's sort of like, and you know, something like South Park is also about whatever it is that there's that's off limits, then that's the place where the comedians who want to push the envelope are going to go. So, I mean, I agree with you. I wouldn't use any ethnic references like that. I think it's really bad.
I mean,
but the more you sanction it and get really censorious about it and make a huge deal about it instead of just saying you're a jerk, screw you, the more you're creating the place where the envelope pushers are going to go.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I think reinforcing a bright line does involve a certain amount of actual sanctioning, and you know that's my view. That's the way I've looked at the way moral systems work, and I think that's the way they work.
I think people should talk back to it. I like the more speech response that's classic in the First Amendment area. Basically, talk back to him. Find ways to tell him. You know, I'm using mild language here, but
surely there is something that somebody could say that would lead you to not invite them to a dinner party.
Oh, sure,
right?
Not invite them. That's what you. Sure.
Okay, that's what
or
I mean.
Not
well, this
be friends
is the,
with the person.
This
I
is the
totally
large scale. This is just the equivalent of that on the public stage, right? This is advertisers saying, "I don't want to be at your dinner party."
Right.
This
if
is,
you're selling that product, I'll buy something
right,
else.
Exactly. That,
everybody's
that's what this
free
is.
To do that. That's true.
It's informal sanctions. I mean, I will say just
but
to
that's
get on
the
my own.
Creation of a culture by show. I mean, some people feel will act like you're repressing speech if you criticize them, and I think there should be more back and forth criticism. And that we should be more open about it. I don't particularly like the endless groveling and apologizing. You know, get the apology out, and then let's have more speech about other things. You know, let's put more good speech into the arena. Not just go over and over flagellating this one guy forever.
No, but I do think, look, if you're going to enforce things, and I mean, I'll give you an example just to get on my own personal hobby horse. I think that something that is as egregious as what he did is when Ann Coulter uses the word raghead to describe a Muslim. Now, that is, there is no possible
right,
motivation for using that
her,
word.
I think her, her motivation is that she's getting you talking about her and getting you all mad about it. And I think, you know, she does
fine,
it on her, whenever she's losing profile, she throws some garbage like that out, and people take the bait. I think she'd do it less if you didn't take the bait so much.
You know,
I agree that it's bad, but why are you giving her? Why is she getting all so much attention?
Well, it's a fine line.
You're giving her the weapon.
Well, let me ask you this: do you think so? You think this is positive reinforcement for Don Imus? Do you think he's going to do this again? I don't think so.
I think it's positive in a way. He won't do exactly this, but he's getting more publicity. Who had been talking about Don Imus before? Was
fine,
he anything? He got some publicity out of this, even though he got negative. I think he also got positive. I think when Ann Coulter does these things, that she's getting something that is valuable to her, and that she has used that path to build her career.
But look, Don Imus, there's no doubt about that. Both of them have. Both of them are in the business of getting as close to the line as they can without going too far. But if he loses advertisers this time, I predict that it's not just that he won't use this exact phrase again. I don't think he'll get this close to this particular line, which is to say slurs directed at black people, again. I predict that. Because I what I'm saying is, you know, you can say, well, when you talk about Ann Coulter, you're giving her what she wants. Well, fine. But if enough people were what I think, is as outraged as they should be, and she started actually hurting her career. And by the way, I think she's about at that point. It's close.
Yeah, I think that getting
but then
invited,
you would send what I think is the right signal, which is in America, the derogation of Muslims as a group should be, you know, forbidden through, not legally, but through social sanction.
And with Imus, he gets these big political figures to go on and do interviews on his show. So there's something unusual about his show, which is he has this shock jock component, and then he has these serious political interviews where people like John McCain will go on the show and talk to him for a long time.
Well, that's
so
that
kind of hybrid, those people now can't associate with him. So actually I think something pretty big did happen to him.
Yeah, I mean, it also helps him out. Like, I assume, like, I'll bet Al Sharpton has been on his show probably, right? I mean, he has developed a network that comes in handy at this point. But maybe Al Sharpton hasn't. But anyway, that's Imus. You wanted to talk about Nancy Pelosi in Syria, not about the substance of what she said, but about...
Yeah, I didn't, I don't really know what to say about her
the whole dress thing, right? She was in a burqa, pictured in a burqa.
This is like my point about writing about how women look and women in power, women in politics, and the kinds of things that if you were to read her, you would see that Robin Gavon talks about how women... present themselves, how they wear their hair, they wear their clothes, what they do when they're in some kind of a political situation. You know, so she, of course, she got herself into that political situation, but she wore these, some kind of an abaya or sort of an outfit to cover the rest of her body, although I haven't seen those pictures. I've read that. But, she had the scarf on that, she wanted to go into this mosque that actually has a Christian relic, supposedly the head of John the Baptist there. So, I mean, she was actually doing something that traditionally Catholic women did, going into churches, right? But it did leave a photograph that allowed people to say, you know, she was basically, you know, what was she doing? What did it mean for her to wear that scarf? I mean, I actually defended her. I argued that it... you know, that if you want to go into a religious building, you have to follow the dress code.
Oh, right. I think a number of people
saw. You should do it out of respect. I don't think
that you would wear a yarmulke, you know, in a synagogue.
Right, and you wouldn't act like, oh, I've actually sold out my faith, or I've joined. You know, I'm being degraded in some way. It's basically you're showing appropriate respect to those other people. I'm actually critical of the people who read too much into it. Like Matt Drudge had a picture of her and it made it seem as if she was just, you know, joining the enemy or something.
No, I think it was the particularly unreflective conservative bloggers who made a big deal out of this, and some defended her. I think is it Jim Garrity who writes the thing on NRO, the Hillary spot or whatever? Mm-hmm. I think he defended her on these grounds.
I might have a problem with the whole diplomatic mission if I looked into it deeply enough to actually have an opinion, which I don't have. I think there's a lot of political theater
She definitely, in some sense, screwed up. I mean, she seemingly did not get her signals straight with Olmert, because she went and she announced that she had delivered this message from Olmert to Syria, and then Olmert's spokespeople say, that's not the message I sent. And so she definitely wound up looking kind of naive and bad.
Well, did she screw up, or did they betray her?
Well, you know, one speculation I've heard from the left is that the Bush people intervened, maybe after she had talked to Olmert, and said, you know, we don't want her to look good, and life won't get easier for you if she looks good. But who knows?
Wow. Well, that's an interesting conspiracy theory, but it, you know,
total speculation. Total speculation, but politics is ain't beanbag.
Yeah. I was also interested in these Iranian sailors, how they were dressed when they were released.
I thought you missed, I saw your blog, I thought you missed one point.
Okay, so,
and I don't know if anybody's made this, but you know the suits that they dressed all the male Brits in when they allowed them to leave? They were like Ahmadinejad suits.
Yeah, a lot of people pointed that out. Yeah, it was they were all
that's
dressed like
out. I mean, they all looked like Ahmadinejad clones.
They looked like Pee Wee Herman, but they didn't have the tie. You know, there's a whole thing about how he doesn't wear a tie.
Exactly. It was that kind of
so
disco
suit
look.
Had, I thought it was like sort of something Ryan Seacrest might wear or Pee Wee Herman would wear a little bow tie, but the gray, the rumpled gray suit, it was really absurd to see them all dressed alike. But then the woman was dressed completely differently. And, you know, I thought there was a lot of political meaning in that outfit. Of course, they humiliated her by dressing her in something that was just, you wouldn't go to the grocery store in it. And it had this horizontal striped long top that came down below the jacket and really made her look fat. She just looked incredibly frumpy and awful. And
do you think they were trying to do that, though?
I think they were trying to humiliate her, and that they were also trying to show how she did not belong in the military. And not only that, not only didn't she belong with the men, but she really shouldn't leave the house. I wouldn't leave the house if that was all I had to wear. That was a bad outfit. It's humiliating to women, you know, with these garish colors, the striped top. I think they were humiliating her.
Hmm. Okay.
Did you see in the news today that, you know, the sailors have sold their stories to the press, and one of the guys in his story was that the Iranians made him cry by saying he looked like Mr. Bean, you know, that British TV comic
characters? Yeah, yeah.
They said he looked like Mr. Bean, and they took his iPod. And now he's being mocked mercilessly for that.
I missed that. And only vaguely recall Mr. Bean.
He did kind of look like Mr. Bean. But imagine the idea that the Iranians, what are they doing to these poor people? They're making them wear bad clothes and comparing them to unflattering TV characters.
See, I think it was in their interest to make these people look good upon leaving, and I thought this was their idea of making them look good. I mean, they wanted people to think, oh, they've been well-treated and decently treated, so they figure, oh, we put our finest suits on them, and our finest suits are the kind the president wears. I don't know.
I think they could have come up with better for the woman. I think the men got reasonably okay suits, although it was a little bit fun. Maybe they don't see why we would find that funny. But if they watch Mr. Bean, maybe their tastes in humor are more Western than we realize.
Yeah. Well, apparently, actually, I mean, a lot of the Iranian people, you know, would be easy for Americans to relate to.
Yeah, how much of American culture do they like, you know? We don't really know. I mean, with Iraq, obviously, we made some mistakes about how much we thought they loved us.
Yeah. You know, actually, one theory I've heard along those lines of one thing that has kind of slowed the reform movement in Iran is the fact that the kids who are eager to absorb kind of, you know, radical Western culture now find it so easy to do by just downloading it off the Internet that they don't have to agitate for it, right? So, I mean, you know, Iran, like this president can do whatever he did at one point, ban certain kinds of songs from the radio, and it doesn't bother them a bit.
Well, you could
they
say
just download the MP3s.
You could say the same thing about American culture, that American young people have dropped out of political activity because their life is all about, you know, music and videos and games and fashions, and they have so much of those things that they want that they have just become inert and politically irrelevant, so that we're doing the same thing here.
Well, there's that, but also the argument is that had that been their motivation 20 years ago, before they could download things from the Internet, they would have had to cause trouble for the government that was trying to deny them of
so
these
it's
things.
So it's in the government's interest to let this flow of popular culture come to them.
Yeah, in a sense, although ultimately it could be, you know, corrupting and radicalizing from the government's point of view, I guess, but in the short term, it's a form of pacification, maybe.
Well, the question is, how does the government really want to control them and dominate them? Does it want to do that because it really wants them to, you know, live up to Islamic values in some fundamentalist way, or do they just want to control them? Because there are lots of ways to control people.
Yeah, no, I would imagine that the government wants to just kind of pacify the more secular opposition to the extent that it can.
So just give them lots of access to the Internet, and they won't bother you.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's a total guess. I have no idea, but there is a fair amount of access over there, I think.
Interesting.
And although, at the same time, that access means, you know, it is a potential form of political empowerment. And, in fact, the in the blogosphere, I think Persian blogs are, what, the fourth most common kinds of blogs linguistically or something like that? I don't know if you've heard this number.
Yeah.
Persian is like it's very high up there in terms of how common a language it is in the blogosphere. Now, was there anything else?
We were going to talk about your New York Times column.
Yeah, if you had any criticisms or anything.
Well, I would like to talk about just personally what it's like to find yourself writing a column if you haven't operated in that mode. It gives you some sympathy for what people like Maureen Dowd go through. Although I feel like if I did it long enough, I'd get used to it. But it's kind of a crazy way to live to see. It comes up twice a week, so when your day is getting close and then you have like this deadline. And they don't really make it clear exactly when the deadline is. Like they won't give you a hard number.
I got a pretty hard number.
Did you? I never knew when the deadline was.
I'm supposed to file at 4 o'clock on Mondays and Fridays.
Oh, they didn't give me a number. That's like, sort of like, we'll get it. I knew I had to get it in that evening, but I really was never given a particular time.
Maybe they gave me a hard number after their experience with you. I don't know. But, I mean, it only lasts a month, so I'll survive it. But I've got to say that if you're going to do this on a regular basis, 2 columns a week, it really would have to be the only thing you did.
Yeah.
I mean, because it is doing that and, you know, overseeing this sprawling media empire, or at least aspiring sprawling media empire. I mean, just doing much of anything else other than write 2 columns a week seems to me like a lot.
It to me, to blog, which I blog a lot, to me to blog and to try to do it was really a weird 2 different ways of thinking, because with blogs, every time I see something I can write about, I write about it immediately.
Right.
And I feel like, well, I'm always writing so many things, it would be easy to just make one of them into a column. But it wasn't that easy. It was so momentous. But then it was also not momentous, because it's sort of like, well, write whatever you want, and then the copy editor will go over it and fix the periods, and it'll go right up. And it'll be in the New York Times 2 hours
later. I think the key to mental health, if you were doing this in the long run, is to convince yourself of the non-momentousness of it.
Yeah, I was trying to do that. I thought it was harder to do than I thought it would be.
Yeah. But, you know, it's... It's a great opportunity. I mean, it's funny. It's not exactly what it would have been 20 years ago, when before the internet and the blogosphere, when there were fewer things competing for the attention of readers. But it is still, you know, a pretty privileged platform.
Yeah.
And
it's behind the Times Select wall, though. I don't like that.
Well, it makes it harder to go viral, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I think you need to link to things. You know, you have to have that, you know, the potential to just get out, you know, to
go viral. I think it probably does discourage bloggers from linking to you. I think definitely the firewall makes it harder to become part of the blogging conversation.
But now you use this idea of going viral in your Easter column.
Yes.
You want to talk about that?
Well, it was just the idea was, I mean, I played around. I mean, the overarching theme was, you know, people on the kind of religious left, I guess you could say, complain that Bush does not follow the moral teachings of Christ. Mm-hmm. The point of the column was partly, look, leave aside the morality. If he would just follow the strategic advice that you see in the Bible, we would be much better off. And one example of that was Jesus doing what I call viral marketing, which is his disciples come up to him and say, you know, they complain to him, look, there's these people out there who are healing people in your name, using your miraculous powers, but they're not following you. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, you know, let them go. They'll definitely say good things about me if they're in that business. In other words, don't obsess about the intellectual property here. Let's get the brand out. And that's a kind of viral marketing. And then he says, those who aren't against us are for us, which is kind of the opposite of what Bush said when he says, those who are not, you know, either you're with us or against us, meaning if you're not really following our leadership, we're going to deem you the enemy. And so that's an example of where I just thought that's a smarter strategy than Bush's.
But you also characterized the early Christians as really operating under the same format as the terrorists, that they're like counter to the overarching power. And
well, I mean, what they had in common was that they were a small but growing religious movement that was deemed a threat by an imperial power. So not that they're like bad in the way terrorists are bad, and they didn't do terrorism, right? Okay, so there are huge differences.
I'm not saying you.
But no, there is the comparison that you know that yeah. I mean, I'm saying in a way, Bush is in the position of the Romans in the sense that there is a small but growing religious movement, radicalism, mm-hmm. that is threatening to the United States for reasons other than the ones that Christianity was perceived as a threat, but still threatening. And I'm saying don't make the mistake the Romans made in the sense of, you know, don't, I mean, when Christ was crucified, basically, you know, they succeeded in killing the person, but, you know, the message, you know, the memes, as in the terminology of Richard Dawkins, the memes, the man died, but the memes spread. And I mean, you know, I'm just saying, you know, which is by now
hopefully
it's kind of a trite
point. Hopefully,
it
spreads because it's actually good. That
well,
the thing that has viral capacity is something that's a good message.
In that case, maybe. But I'm saying, in the case with radical Islam, it's not a good message, right. Certainly from our point of view. And we shouldn't make the mistake of killing the men in ways that foster the spread of the memes. That's the analogy. And I'm just saying, you know, if you know, you have to kill terrorists, you always have to kill enemies sometimes, but make sure you don't do it in a way that actually facilitates a message. In itself, it's a pretty trite point, actually, and I've now said it so many times that I don't feel especially insightful when I say it. It was just a new vehicle for illustrating it.
And you had the Easter column. Did you feel compelled because it was Easter that you had to write the Easter column? I was worried when I was on that the Libby verdict was going to come out, and then I'd have to write about that, and I hadn't been following it closely enough to feel interested in writing about it.
Did you do many following the news columns?
No, the only one I did following the news was about something that Giuliani and something that Romney had said about abortion, the way they were trying to sort of finesse the abortion issue.
Yeah.
That's the only one I did.
Yeah, I actually haven't done one. And I guess, you know, to live the experience, you should maybe try it. It's just,
yeah.
It's kind of a little scary if the news breaks too close to the deadline.
Yeah, yeah. But then there's the thing, you know, if you think something is going to break and something's going to come to you, and then nothing comes, and then you just sort of freak out. I mean, I had some just, like, empty-headed moments where I felt like, oh, no, I'm so sad, that I'm just going to fail to do it.
Scary.
But, thrilling.
Yeah.
So have we gone? We did two segments.
We've gone
segments,
a long time.
So
if you add up the two files, yeah, we should probably for the benefit of anyone who may still be standing out there, we should probably sign off.
Yeah. we won't bend your
but
ear.
But thanks,
forever.
You know, I really feel we've made diplomatic progress here, and we can say once again that Blogging Heads is a uniter, not a divider. You know,
but we had a lot of drama too. So
there was drama, but then there was ultimately a kind of overture that
yeah, there was
that,
a narrative arc to the whole darn thing, wasn't it?
It's almost as if it was planned, which God knows it wasn't.
It's all theater.
But I want and who knows, maybe that will lead you and Jessica to be actually conversing on Blogging Heads TV, which would be great. But that would take both of you to want it to happen. I don't know if either of you does. But in any event, and I still encourage you to go find your ideal dialogue partner, and we'll try to get him a camera.
Okay. Well, maybe some people in the comments will make some suggestions. My perfect
counterpart. Yeah, that would be, we would encourage ideas for Anne. And this will inevitably lead to some cruel jokes.
Yeah,
realize.
I know, I just realized that. I'm just waiting to see what it is.
That's life in the blogosphere, as you know.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
thanks
nice
a lot.
Nice to talk to you. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.